time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
My father was always a Newcastle fan, and I was proud. I was a real man, sir. I became besotted with football. I was a bit of a star, a little prodigy in my little village. So many failed. They think managing is easy. I was England manager for 8 years, 8 years. George, I don't think there's been a manager in a game like me. I loved Ipswich and European nights with Porto, Sporting Lisbon, PSV, and obviously Barcelona. I came home and George, I think I did a hell of a job. You know, the North East means a lot to me. Maybe the legacy, which is just as important to me, is that I'm going to try and help people fight cancer. So, you know, I've been lucky.
This is Bobby 90, a four-part podcast series brought to you by The Athletic to mark what would have been Sir Bobby Robson's 90th birthday. My name is George Culkin, and towards the end of his life, I worked with Sir Bobby on his final book. We looked at photographs, stirred memories, turned pages. It took Sir Bobby on a journey, his journey, from his early days as a miner's son in County Durham, through his mazy career in management, back home to Newcastle, and finally as his health declined, leading what he would describe as his last and greatest team, the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation. These recordings, brought to you by kind permission of Sir Bobby's family, have never been heard before. Episode 2. Sir Bobby's extraordinary life in management is a story of adventure and success. Trophies at Ipswich Town, 8 years with England, an unmatched dribble through European clubs. But all that success was hard won.
Trials and tribulations.
Yeah.
Learn about losing.
Yeah.
How to react from losing.
Yeah.
Easy to win, John.
Yeah.
It's when you lose.
Yeah.
It's the next week
yeah.
And the next match. And then you lose again.
And
that's why so many fail.
Yeah.
They think it's easy.
Yeah.
They think managing is easy. And it's the most difficult job in sport, is managing a football club, getting consistent results,
yeah.
Running a club, learn about judging a player, tactics, training, preparation, scouting, set up a network of scouts, you know, for seeing the whole initiative. Discipline from players, discipline of your own staff.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And unless you've got that experience and you're a shrewd cookie, you'll fail. And many can't cope.
No.
Can't cope. Headache. Shannon rang me at 2 o'clock in the morning one day to buy gates. Woke me up. And when I complained, someone said, listen, when Shannon rings you up at 2 o'clock in the morning to buy one of your players, you should be delighted. That means you've arrived on the scene. It's true, isn't it? But I said, who's that? I said, it's Bill Shannon. But he said, 2 o'clock in the morning. I said, yeah. He wants to buy gates. George, I don't think there's been a manager in a game like me. In terms of when I was at Ipswich, I was manager. I was a coach, I was on the pitch every day. I bought and sold players, I negotiated contracts. All the time I was there, the chairman and the board of directors never bought and sold a player. I did it. Never contracted a player, you know, I did it. I set up the youth policies, you know, network of scouts. I would scout myself. I never signed a player unless I saw them. I travelled the breadth of the country looking for players and then teams and stuff like that. George, I did everything. I even bought the toilet rolls. And I made the decision at Ipswich to build the stand. We knew we had to kind of build a team, build a club, bit by bit. I was there 14 years. We decided to go ahead on this new stand, on this new stand. £1.8 million was going to cost us. I'm talking about 25 years ago. And £1.8 million then, £2 million would be like spending £30 million now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd judge it by the whole stadium now for £30 million, can you?
Yeah.
And where this board meeting, and three wanted to build, and three didn't. So Stanley, the chairman said, right, Bob, you've got the custom vote. I said, what? He said, well, you're the manager. You know, you suggest that we should try and do this. We need your decision. Do we build or do we not build? And I was the manager. I made the decision at Ipswich to build the stand. And you had a good team. We didn't owe a penny. We had an 8,000 waiting list of season tickets in the whole area because we had a good team.
Yeah.
We couldn't satisfy the public. Yeah. You know, the team was better than the stadium. We have a situation now where the stadiums are better than the teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in my time, it was in reverse. And I said to the board, we have to keep going. You know, we don't owe a penny. We've got a good youth policy going. We have a good team. We have a young team. We've got young players coming through. Build it. So we built on my decision. I had to be a financial genius. I did.
I know what you were.
And I was.
I know.
I bought and sold well, and I developed a youth policy. But like I said, the chairman, but it needs time, chairman.
Yeah.
The 7-year-old boy and 16-year-old boy that we were going to bring into this club will not be ready for 3 years.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I don't know where we'll go. So that was one of my briefs, keepers in the black. That's gone absolutely out of the window.
Yeah.
Every manager I read about is wondering this summer, how much is he going to get from the chairman to make the team better? I wrote a book with Brian Scoville. I called it Time on the Grass.
Yeah.
Meaning the success of the club was going to be about the amount of time we spent with the players on the pitch, coaching and training and preparation and development. And I explained that to the board. Of course, that's what they did. They gave me time. Didn't give me any money, but they gave me time. And time is money in football.
Yeah.
And when I chased kids, which I did in Ipswich, because we had no money, we had to develop a youth policy. I set up a great network of scouts and I set up a great youth policy. And I produced more players, I think, than any club at that time ever did, even West Ham. And we had an amazing record of bringing through players through. Top players. Beattie, Osman, Butcher, George Burley, Johnny Walk, Alan Brazil, Clive Woods, Wayne Weimark, Osborne,
yeah.
Talbot. And they made it. They were internationals.
Yeah.
I only bought three players, Mariner, Muir and Tyson. The rest we developed with a scout network, bring kids in, training, encouraging, coaching, you know, producing good players from a basic ingredient. I mean, we signed Brazil, all he had was a left foot. And I said, I remember saying to my cousin, staff, this kid's got a left foot that is like Puskas. He had a left foot, brilliant. Didn't know where to run, a bit fat, couldn't head it. Didn't know whether he would have the hard working ingredient to make it push himself. But we made him a great player. He was a great player, Brazil. He had this left foot. It was suitless, you know, spinning and coming down the inside left channel. Now, Almiron would stick the ball down there and he would be on his left foot, you know. And we produced all these players, George.
When you were Ipswich manager, that was the first time you got your hand on the cup, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
And what was it like, that feeling?
Oh, it was thrilling. It was thrilling. It was very satisfying, you know, great emotion, you know, great feeling. It was an achievement, you know.
Yeah.
We felt it was not just great, but it was an achievement. We'd beaten Arsenal, you know, deservedly, you know.
Yeah.
We weren't lucky about it, and played very well on the day, and the fact that we won it, and it was a marvellous feeling. It was a day of real emotion and excitement and, as I say, achievement. We just felt we'd achieved something really huge and historical, and we'd never forget it. And will we ever win it again? Never been anywhere near it, have we? Ipswich.
Yeah. European nights were something special for you.
Oh, yeah. I actually enjoyed them, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a bevy of them with Ipswich, you know. We were in Europe about 10 years out of the 14 I was there. Amazing.
The flag is up for offside against Brazil, and Ipswich win the Europa Cup on an aggregate of 5-4. Ipswich Town have lifted a trophy, and 7,000 and more fans from Suffolk are able now to celebrate at the end of this dramatic season for their club.
Number 16 counts there in the first. Robson walking out for his first match at Wembley as England manager. Various mishaps having ruled out Francis, Hoddle, Brian Robson, Anderson and Coppell.
Brian, oh, Brian was the top, he was one of the top guys I'd ever come across in terms of attitude, toughness, desire, enthusiasm, huge commitments as a player, you know, a bloody warrior in terms of tackling and repossessing the ball and getting forward, his bravery in the tackle, his bravery in the air. He was a great player, Brian. He was a great player. He had everything. He made goals, scored goals, defended goals. So he created, he scored, he defended. Inspirational. Tough as teak. Never saw him flinch a tackle. Never saw him pull out in the air. Never. Him and Butcher were unbelievable.
And he would hurt himself. I mean, he did hurt himself.
Well, he did, yeah. I remember once Malcolm Allison making a statement about that. You know, Brian had to show more common sense, less kamikaze. Otherwise, he wouldn't finish his career off or something like that, or, you know. Or he wouldn't get too many injuries. But, George, if he didn't have that type of commitment and wasn't afraid of any hazard, he wouldn't have been Brian Robson.
Yeah.
He'd have been an ordinary player. But because he spotted no danger, he wasn't stupid, but he wasn't afraid of anything.
No.
And because he was that sort of a player, that made him Brian Robson. That put him above everybody else, because nobody else had what he had. Bravery, his courageous attitude, his winning mentality, you know, picking the ball up and in the dressing room just before we went out and saying, and he'd pick up a ball and say, right, you know, like, all right, are we ready, like, you know, let's welly into this lot, you know, and you thought, Jesus, he's going to...
Was he the best captain you had?
Yeah, absolutely. But she was the same time. Robson was just magnificent, in my opinion, absolutely magnificent. I always felt with him in the team, which we had a chance of winning. And when he wasn't in the team, I always knew there was a weakness. There was something the team would lack that night. And you know, he played about 90 times, you know. I think it was about 90 times. He must have missed 35 games through injury with me. I mean, we sent him home twice for a start, didn't we? From the
two World Cups,
86 and 1990.
Yeah.
You know, he never played. Sent him home. He suited Gascoigne, the way Gascoigne played and the way Robson would play with him. George, I had him at Ipswich as a boy.
Did you really?
Paul Gascoigne was at Ipswich Town Football Club on trial. I remember him. This fellow John Cruz, who sent me Eric Gates and Beattie, a fellow called Tommy Parker and Robin Turner, John Fidelity, Paul Gascoigne, sent me all those kids. He sent me Paul Gascoigne.
Good story.
Yeah, and I sent him back.
Can you remember why?
Because he was tubby and fat. Yeah. And I didn't think he'd ever have the body shape to be, you know, a professional footballer. I always thought he'd have a weight problem.
Yeah, well.
And he would lack pace. He'd be carrying weight all the time. But George, he could head it. He could pass it. He could dribble. He could run with the ball. He could shoot. He was very infectious. He'd train all day. He had amazing energy, never seemed to tire. He knew when to pass it. That one was on, but that was better, so he always knew, nah, that's the better one. His selection of pass was terrific.
Yeah.
And no, that one's too tight. I'll lose position on that one. I'll play that, I'll keep it safe. He knew the difference between safety and penetration. I saw him play, and he had bits. I mean, but I just thought, send him home.
Well.
So I made a huge mistake. No, I did. Because he turned out to be a great player in the end. I mean, you see, when Jackie was here, Jackie Charlton, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He drove Jackie mad, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, he would do. I mean, he would do. He never lost that, you see.
Yeah.
He never lost that precociousness, you know,
and
cockiness and stupidity and something for a laugh, you know, and He never lost it all the way through, you know, and he was very, very popular, I must say, in Italy, but he did crazy things, jumping into pools and...
Playing tennis before,
man. Oh, absolutely. Whatever environment he was in, and he got onto a football pitch, something clicked in. and you could keep the concentration, he'd be daft in the dressing room before the match.
Yeah.
And you think, Paul, steady down, Paul, you know. And yet all the time he was out on the pitch during the game, he would be highly focused, you know. He just lived for that hour and a half. I mean, I remember, really, his first match when Chris Waller was playing, wide on the left. And I brought him on as a sub towards the end of a match. And I put him on, and I didn't want to disturb the midfield because it was going well. So I put him on the right-hand side, semi-wide. I knew it wasn't his position, but we were winning at the time. And I said, look, Paul, keep on the right-hand side. Give us the width when you have to. When we've lost it, you feel you can tuck in to defend and get in your tackles and get possession. Do it. I said, but remember, I put you on to give us the width on the right. We've got Cruzy out there. Stay on the right. Give us the width when necessary and tuck in when we've lost it, you know. You understand that? And he did, because he had a football, right? Within 2 minutes, George, he's playing outside left with Chrissy. He's now gone as far from where I told him to play as anybody could do. And after the match, I said, Paul, I told you what to do. Stay on the right. Keep the right berth going. You know what I said? He said, but Chrissy's my mate. He said, I know that. He said, but I want to play with me mate. I said, Paul, we're talking about international football. Keep on the right next time. Otherwise, I won't put you on, Paul. If you don't listen to me, I won't put you on. And he went across because Chrissy was his mate, and he wanted to share the ball on the left-hand side with Chrissy. And we played at Wembley for 100,000 people. And he suddenly had to learn about, you know.
Yeah.
A little bit later on he did, yeah. He became, you know, quite a controllable boy, you know, on the pitch. You know, when he got in the team and people could see his quality and they knew he could play, and he was very influential. And the only thing, George, he wanted the ball so much that sometimes he would get himself way out of position, you know, in his anxiety to get the ball. But he was a good player. I would have said that year was his finest hour.
90, yeah.
It was his finest bout of football, I think, in his whole career. He played well at Tottenham to get into the squad, but he came to the fore in the World Cup.
90, I mean, obviously everyone remembers those kind of iconic images of him crying and the yellow card and all that. I mean, that whole tournament created such an interest in football back home, and it just exploded.
Yeah, sure. The thing was that I'd been the job 8 years, so I knew the players very well, and you know, I think I'd say, look, I've got my own ideas, but I think the first thing is, who wants to take the penalties? I mean, let me throw it open to you, you know, who would like to take them? And I knew that the ones that I would like, who no different from the ones who put up the hand.
Right.
When PC missed, I couldn't believe it, because he's our best penalty kicker, PC.
Yeah.
I thought he was. He had a strong man, he had this left foot, and he picked his butt, but he whacked, you know, he got it in there.
Yeah.
Didn't kind of, you know, he just, woof, little short run of him, whacked. Which, oh, bloody hell, like, and they scored. And I was quite calm with Chrissy. I mean, you would take them in training like shelling peas.
Right.
He could run to a ball, close his eyes, and still score. And you hit them low. And Chrissy did something I'd never seen him do before. He just went and he just leaned back, put it with Bob.
Yeah.
Miles high. It was a shock.
What can you say to someone after that?
Well, you can't. They were disconsolate, George.
Yeah.
They were tearful. And I mean tearful. And Stuart Pearce was a strong character.
Yeah.
And he was trilling down.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do when you see two guys crestfallen? They're in a bad shape, psychologically, emotionally, embarrassingly for them. And I just went up to them and said, you've done your best, that's all you can do, forget about it. You know, we've done brilliantly to get here. We'll all be heroes when we go home. And that's all I said.
You were worse.
And I was worse enough to. I was England manager for 8 years, not two. 8 years, so, like, where do you go when you've been the manager of England for 8 years? And at the time, like, all the big clubs who had, you know, managers, so I really fancied going abroad. And I got this offer. I knew it was a good club, a big club. One of the three best in Holland. European champions at one stage, you know, they won the European Cup, didn't they, at PSV?
Yeah.
And I've been at PSV anyway. I've seen their stadium, so I knew it had a 30,000 sellout every match. So I knew it was a big club. And I knew about, you know, the English language being prevalent there.
Yeah.
And like I said, where do you go when you've been England manager? And I thought, well, my next, if I'm going to carry on working and I can't get a big club here, the next step is to go abroad. And I always liked this fall, you know, with Cruyff and Kroll and Gullit and Marco van Basten and all those. And it's produced some great players, isn't it?
And it sort of opens doors. I mean, you know, proved that you could work on the
continent. Yes, it did,
And then from there you...
I just went on and on and on. And then they liked me so much that they brought me back.
Yeah.
I was there for 2 years, then I was away for six. So I must have pleased them, because they wouldn't have brought me back, would they?
Absolutely.
I never bought an English player all the time I was abroad, and I never took one Englishman to work with me.
No?
No. I felt I should stay with what was in the club, give them a chance to satisfy me. If they were good, why change? And then I had, you know, obviously European nights with PSV. Porto.
Yeah.
Even Sporting Lisbon. Result, Moser Deutsch, Fernand Code Zero. Come, Des Jogadores, sempre difficile. Grand job, Dossi Kippers. And obviously Barcelona.
Our attacking structure. Oscar, Della Penna, Giovanni, Ronaldo, Figo, Otto.
The previous 2 years before I went there, Johan Cruyff had never won a thing. That's why they changed him. I did very well against Real Madrid.
Yeah.
We drew them first round of the Spanish Cup. Oh, I thought, jeez. Man, they would think the same.
Yeah.
They would think, oh, no, Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, no, Real Madrid, but we knocked them out.
Yeah.
We drew there. And won the replays over two legs.
Yeah.
I did great, you see. I did great. Yeah. I won the European Cup Winners' Cup. I won the Spanish Cup. I won the Super Cup and finished second in the league. And we played 14 games more than Real Madrid did. Capello was at Real Madrid. He won the league by 2 points. He won it by one game. And we played that year 14 games more than they did that season. Because we went all the way to the European Cup Winners' Cup.
Yeah.
They didn't even play in Europe that year. We did. And we won it. So we played all those matches. I lost my job. By this time they signed Louis the year before, secretly to me.
Yeah.
And suddenly, I've had this marvellous season. They've got two managers. They've got two coaches. So Louis comes in and I'm still on my contract. I've still got 1 more year on my contract. So that's why they had to pay me. I was the gentleman. They said to me first, well, what do you do? I said, well, get rid of him.
Yeah.
I said, have I let you down?
Yeah.
Have I not done the job for you? Oh, but, you know, so I said, well, get rid of him. I want to save my job. And I turned down Newcastle, you know, at the time as well.
Yeah.
And I think they'd given him a 2-year contract as well. So I had 1 year left. He had 2 years or 3 years. And it was delicate, you know, and I could see there was a problem. So I went to the chairman with Jose. I said, look, you've got yourself in a problem. And you shouldn't have done this. Or you should have been honest with me, and you weren't.
Yeah.
So I was quite strong, I also tell you. I spoke for myself. And, you know, they agreed, and they didn't know what to do. They were in a cleft stick.
Yeah.
So they either had to sack me, or get rid of me, or get rid of Louis. And they didn't want to sack me because I didn't deserve to be sacked, you know?
No, because
they were aware that I was popular.
Yeah.
And I defeated the Johan Cruyff legendary status that he'd created. I'd killed it in 1 year. So I just had a couple of weeks to think about it, and they were sweating and didn't know what to do, and the bloody papers every day churned it all, you know, pro for Bobby Robson, pro for, you know, Louis van Gaal and all this. How can they do this to Bobby Robson, blah, blah, blah. And maybe they should do, because you've got Louis van Gaal coming with a big reputation. It was a nightmare. It was a night, and I just stood my ground. And I could see it was never going to get solved. So I went in and I said, look, not through me, through you. You've made this mess, and you have to be aware of this. So I said, I'll drop out. I'll leave Barcelona with my name, reputation, completely intact.
Yeah.
And they were relieved, and the chairman said, we don't want to sack you, but what we'll do is, would you accept... The terminology was director, because the word director is a Spanish word as well. A director or fiches, which is signings. So I said, I'll do that. But, you know, there's a condition. They said, we know what you're going to say. We will not take a penny off your salary. I travelled the world, George. I went to all sorts of countries I'd never been to before, looking at players. I just spent a year travelling.
Yeah.
So I went and I went to Spain. I travelled around in Spain watching teams. I went to France. I watched a bit of French football. I didn't go to Portugal very often. Went to Germany. Went to South America to Brazil to see a couple of Brazilian teams. And then I went to the World Under 17 Championship, which was in Egypt. So I was in Cairo and wherever they were. You know, I took an assistant scout with me, and we went to see all these youth matches, you know. I was there for about 3 weeks. I stayed in 5-star hotels.
Obvious.
You know, money no object, you know, and the cars laid on and ticket stuff. It was great. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Yeah. How's Barcelona going on? They lost. All right. I did some great things. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I got well paid. I was the best paid scout in the world. Because I got paid with the same salary.
Was it enjoyable, or was it frustrating that you weren't so that on the
mixed
pitch?
George?
Yeah.
Mixed. Listen to this. At the end of that year, when my contract was up, the chairman asked to see me, the President Nunes asked to see me, and he wanted me to stay on. He said, we can't offer you the money that you're on now, because we've just honoured your contract.
Yeah.
And as you know, it was a huge sort of money, but I said, yeah, it was. So they offered me 300, which was 10 years ago. They offered me 300 grand a year to be the scout. I turned it down and went back home. But on the way back home, I went to PSV.
Yeah.
But they offered me a salary of 300 grand a year and all expenses and house and car to stay on. And I turned it down. I don't know whether I did the right thing, but anyway.
Well,
I did. I went back to PSV for a year. I got them into the Champions League again.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that's me. That's me. Well, you're responsible for being victorious in playing football. You are responsible for winning games in football. You are responsible for being the best and not being the last, and not even being second sometimes. Sometimes that's impossible to achieve what people want you to achieve. You know, there's a ruthlessness above it all, I think. And sometimes there's a lack of understanding of how difficult it is, and, you know, the impossibilities of having to win every match in every blinking competition, because you can't do it. I had a chairman, George, who used to say, well, Bobby, it's not our turn to win today, and by losing, we've given the other team the pleasure of winning. And I said, look at all that, and I said, is he all right? I mean, I should say, that's a good story, isn't it? Want to do it all again? Well, I wouldn't miss it.
Thank you.
Sir Bobby Robson launched his foundation in 2008 following his fifth cancer diagnosis to find more effective ways to detect and treat the disease. Part of Newcastle Hospital's charity, the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation, works within the NHS and in partnership with other leading charities and organisations. It funds cutting-edge cancer treatments and innovative cancer support services, including the clinical trials of new drugs at the Sir Bobby Robson Cancer Trials Research Centre. Sir Bobby described his foundation as his last and greatest team. He had no idea how large his team would grow or how much it would go on to achieve. For more information or to donate, please visit sirbobbyrobsonfoundation.org.uk. That's sirbobbyrobsonfoundation.org.uk.